Hi everyone, I'm Laura Kaluger, Senior Editor with Commercial Property Executive, and you're listening to and watching a special edition of FTI Experts Hub, the quarterly podcast series that brings you the latest insights from FTI consulting specialists. My guest today is Mark Dunek, who is a Senior Managing Director with the company. He is a thought leader with more than two decades of experience in real estate, who also teaches real estate classes at two universities. Together, we're going to focus on CRE valuations and what to expect for the office sector. I know that Mark has some unique views and insights to share. Thank you so much for accepting my invitation.
Thank you for Laura. Thank you for giving me the opportunity.
It's a pleasure. So, first of all, let's talk about how much work culture has changed, because the pandemic is basically behind us now. We're looking at it in the rearview mirror. But I know that businesses, CRE businesses, are suffering, and the work culture, then everything that has to do with the way people work, has changed a lot. How much has work has this thing changed, and how much has your way of working changed? Because I know everything is different from what we used to know in 2019.
Laura, what a great question. firstly, real estate conferences are back in session. People are traveling for business. It's exciting to be out of the house. It's exciting to go back to work. But specifically as it relates to lack of face-to-face interactions, this is not just an issue impacting commercial real estate. It's impacting all types of businesses. Mm-hmm. Look, there's definitely new challenges not encountered prior to COVID, and they all need to be addressed. So for example, firms are now increasingly mandating more employees to return to the office. FTI Consulting, our current office mandate, back to work office mandate, is to be more in the office than not, which is a minimum of 3 days. 3 days a week. And I'm encouraging my colleagues to come in more than 3 days a week. Me personally, I'm in 5 days a week. Mm-hmm. Although the remote workforce has allowed for more flexible work schedule, look, the daily commute has been, if not cut in half, been completely eliminated. When you're not commuting into the office, there's definitely more family time. There's opportunities to take care of more home responsibilities, but you know what? Not being in the office is definitely impacting, and not in a positive way, the process of forming cohesion among colleagues. I'm encouraging my team to come into the office because you cannot, there's so much you could do via Teams and Zoom, but it's sitting with me and sitting with, when I was moving up along the ranks, sitting with my mentors in their office, meeting with workers, at the water cooler. There's just the nonstop collaboration and friendships that are being formed that you just can't get it via Teams and Zoom. You're constantly trying to schedule a meeting, and sometimes people are not at their computers. It's really not a good work environment. And I strongly believe that we're actually heading back to normal. I mean, this is, you're going to hear this, for me, you're going to hear this first from me. I strongly believe within 5 years, not only are we going to be back in the office 5 days a week, but we're going to be business attire.
Well, all those Gen Zs are going to disagree.
I'm talking suit and tie Monday through Thursday, and it's going to be business casual on Fridays. The Gen Z, Gen X, call it whatever generation you want. I think it's time to go back to the office. When you dress appropriately, you act more appropriately. There's more respect in the office, and people take each other more seriously. Look, you have to dress a certain way, and you end up acting a certain way as well. I'm so looking forward to that day when we're back in the office 5 days a week and dressing accordingly.
And if we're all going to go back to the office, does that mean that we need more office space. Does that mean that those who have given up space to save money will want it back? Will they be looking for office space? Will that impact office valuations in any way?
Wow, that's a mouthful, but long story short, in my professional opinion, yes, it's all about population. And what do I mean by that is there's just increased people in the workforce. We have increased immigrant. This is not just across the United States. This is all around the world. We have an increased population. Yes, there are people, the baby boomer generation heading towards retirement, but some of them are staying in the workforce longer. The next generations are getting into the workforce. Everybody needs a place to live and to work. I know we're not talking multifamily for a second or residential homes. People will need a place to work. I do believe people want to leave their home, get out of their home, and go into an office space. I think it's good for mental health just to get out of the home as well. But specifically as it relates to office, yes, I think there's short-term issues as it relates to the office sector. Yes, some companies have reduced their footprint because of COVID-19, but I think we're going to see a return to office. Is everybody going to be running to the CBD? Maybe not. I think, will there be some satellite offices opening up more so because people have moved further away from the office, further away from their original office? Yes. I hope I answered your question.
Yes. And there was this last part of my questions related to office valuations. How much is the fact that people are going to use the office more often impact this, the office property values?
Sure. So again, I mean, there's several factors there. Leaving financing aside, and we could have a whole podcast just on increased interest rates and carry costs and how that's affecting overall values. But leaving the issue of financing, it's all about supply and demand. As people need and want more office space, just as any other property type, those values will increase accordingly. Again, I see the world a little bit differently. How does one become successful in real estate? You need to have two things: cash flow and patience. Patience. If you need capital for capital expenditure, be it for tenant improvements, if you have a long-term horizon, in my opinion, that's the way real estate is supposed to be played. I teach real estate at University of Miami as well as Montclair State University in New Jersey. That's what I teach my students. Real estate's supposed to be a long-term play. It's not a set. You know, some of the private equity firms, they'll come and they'll buy, and we have a five-year hold or a seven-year hold. That's not how real estate's supposed to be played.
It's all related to the market conditions. It's all related to all these factors that are not in your power to control, basically, right?
There are a lot of external factors. So, for example, we just mentioned financing. How is the U.S. government dealing with monetary policy? How are interest rates either going, well, now it's just going up, it's not going down. You know, there's external forces like COVID-19. I mean, nobody would have known that this act of God would have taken place. You know, there's weather issues, right? So there are factors that are outside of our control, but what is in our control is what type of lifestyle do we want to live? What type of work environment do we want to have? Me personally, I work much better when I'm surrounded by colleagues. That's how I learn and grow. Although I've been in the business for 20 years and I'm a senior professional now, working in the business, again, as I just mentioned, 20 plus years, I'm still learning and growing. It's a nonstop learning and growing environment when you're in the office, and I'm learning from everybody, not just from, you know, people senior to me, but I'm learning from all colleagues, from consultants all the way up to partners and senior managing directors. I'm learning from everybody, and I'm assuming that others feel the same way.
Because you mentioned the financial conditions out there, and we have all been reading all over the media about the maturing debt and the higher default rates that we've seen in many office markets. And there's really this unhealthy cocktail out there of those tighter financial conditions with illiquid markets, and all of this have the potential to add to borrowers' struggles to refinance their loans. And there have been some heavyweight office landlords who have given up space and or have been delinquent on their loans. What signals does this send to the market? The fact that there are so many really huge companies who cannot really return the loans.
No, this is, you know, there is a fundamental point that needs to be discussed. First of all, when these products, these be it office product, retail, multifamily, whatever property type firms are acquiring, A, were they acquiring them at appropriate values? Meaning when they were acquired, did they overpay? Were they overvalued? And now, you know, with vacancy rates increasing, lower NOI issues as it relates to financing, that values are definitely not here today as they were pre-COVID, and we're not even specifying specific property types, what is taking place? So is there a fundamental valuation problem overall? Yes. What did I say in the beginning? It's, mm-hmm. you know, what is the appropriate loan to value for a property? Should firms be leveraging, excuse my language, but up the wazoo? I mean, at what debt level is appropriate? Again, as I teach my students, you know, having an appropriate debt level, and of course you'll ask me, what is the appropriate debt level?
Right.
55% loan to value, 70% loan to value. Now, we know the private equity firms are leveraging much higher. You have first notes, second notes, mezzanine. You have all these different types of notes and loans on the properties. And it's just pushing purchase prices that much higher back in the day when they were acquired. And then the question is, were they acquired at above, at an overvalued price?
Right.
I would suggest if you are pushing your debt level so high, I would suggest yes. So now the fact that refinancing is an issue now with increased of interest rates. There's an issue now with concessions. Let's talk office for a moment. In order to get in new tenancies, there's going to be increase in tenant improvements. There's going to be increase in concessions in terms of free rent. All mm-hmm. of these issues have a bottom line impact on cash flow and cash available for distribution. So yes, everything is being pushed down as it relates to values. But again, it's how should real estate be played? And in my professional opinion, it should be long-term. It's not this five-year hold or seven-year hold. So if you are a real estate investor out there and you have cash available and you are a long-term holder, now's the best time to acquire.
I've read a lot about this growing divide between the best and the rest when it comes to office properties. Some high-end, really modern office spaces, they continue to capture record high rents. Do you expect this to continue for these modern office assets? Will everyone want to work in one in the future?
What a great question. And look, I work in New York City, and New York City, with all due respect to everybody else around the world, is the capital city of the world as it relates to finance and the arts and everything. When I look at New York City office, you have brand new product like SL Green's One Vanderbilt or their new office building in Madison, and you have Hudson Yards. Those Class A trophy buildings are brand new. The amenities are to die for, and that's where not just my generation, but the newer generation just starting to get into the workforce, that's where they want to work. They don't want to work in a Class B, Class C building, and employers are prepared to pay the rent. You look at One Vanderbilt, you look at Hudson Yards, occupancies are at all-time highs. I mean, I believe they're at stabilization. I don't have the specific stat on the tip of my tongue, but I believe they're at stabilization. That's where employees want to work. But again, I view the office market a little bit different from others. So although you have older product, Class B and C property, again, just specifically as it relates to New York City, there's repositioning taking place. There's going to be conversions, for example, to multifamily. And it's those owners who are bleeding cash, they have debt coming to be mature, and they need to do something. And they're prepared to convert those office properties into multifamily, for example. I believe it's short-sighted. And again, within 5 years, I think we're back into the office 5 days a week. Again, business attire, suit. I know you're laughing, suit and tie. I mean, I have.
I look forward to talking to you again. I mean, I look forward to talking to you again sooner than 5 years, but yeah, if this is really what's going to happen, you're really someone who can
You
really predict the future.
look, you're going to have employers wanting to take more space as employees will come back into the workforce, into the office. So, for example, where's the human capital? And again, we're just focusing on New York for a minute, but they're typically living in and around major cities. And where are employers opening their, and again, we're just speaking office for example, where are they opening? Well, they're opening in cities. They're not opening in small, secondary and tertiary markets. There are secondary and tertiary market office and retail and multifamily. Everybody needs a place to work and to live. But
Of course.
as we look at larger markets such as Boston, Chicago, LA, Miami. I mean, what's happening in Miami is really unbelievable. That's almost like a country onto its own, South Florida. But that's what we're seeing. People are heading back to the office, and if they like it or not, the employers are mandating it. And me being a team leader within FTI's real estate practice, I'm highly encouraging my colleagues to come into the office every day that I'm here, and I'm here 5 days a week.
Okay. Going back to office property values, when do you expect them to stabilize? I mean, for everyone to be more confident when they're talking about office value. Things seem to be very liquid right now.
Well, there's a couple issues as it relates to valuation, right? So it's all about converting income into value. It's this magical capitalization rate and where cap rates may be. I do believe there is a correlation between interest rates and cap rates, but let's leave external factors aside because I can't predict where interest rates are going to go. Although I am predicting where I believe suit and tie is going to go, but I don't know where interest rates are going to go. But the word you use is stabilization. So I do believe that stabilization occurs in two ways as it relates to any property type. You could have physical occupancy. So, for example, if stabilization in New York City for office is 90 or 95% physical occupancy, I think we're going to get there. There's also economic stabilization. So we have two types of stabilization, both physical and economic stabilization. I do believe physical stabilization will reach that 90 to 95% within 5 years, if not sooner. And the economic stabilization occurs when there's no longer rent concessions, when there is a demand for office, and they're not only taking that you know, the physical occupancy goes up, but the rent concessions are greatly reduced, and mm-hmm. that NOI is going to be slowly increasing with increased rents, and that's when we reach economic stabilization. But that's just the NOI component, right? That income component. That's right. Where the market overall, be it employers, employees, landlords, they have, through their hard work, they could push physical and economic occupancy. But as it relates to the overall, where cap rates are going, where interest rates are going, I don't know.
Because we keep referring to 5 years from now, 2028, 2029, who will have been the winners by then from all the situation that we see today, the financial situation? Who will be the winners in 2029?
So let's take a step back for a moment. Historically speaking, who are the wealthiest people in the world? And the answer is property owners. Yes, technology. Yes, Elon Musk. Fine.
The AI.
Technology sector and AI, sure. But at the end of the day, land is finite, right? You're in New York City. You can outsource land. Land is, you know, there's a specific amount of land. And as it relates to who are going to be the winners and losers, the winners are going to be long-term holders. Winners are going to be one who is the multi-generational, or as I like to describe them, the dynastic families, the ones mm-hmm. who've been in the business over 100 years. They're three, four, five generations, and they're buying real estate, and they're planning on owning and managing them and never selling, and essentially handing over the keys to their, not grandkids, but their great-grandchildren. Mm-hmm. Those are going to be the winners, because where the market is at any given time, they don't care because they're not selling. So, mm-hmm. so as long as they don't have to give back the keys and they have cash to weather the ups and downs in terms of maybe they need money for capital expenditure, they need money to reconfigure the space, encouraging tenants to come in. And again, it's focusing on that physical and economic occupancy. Those are the winners. The losers are going to be those who are trying to time the market. They have a short-term hold period, be it 5 or 7 years. And again, in my professional opinion, that's not the way real estate's supposed to be played.
Okay. One last question. How is the younger generation perceiving what is going on in the real estate market today? Because I know you teach real estate courses, so you must talk to students all the time. How are they seeing all this?
They are very excited. The real estate industry is huge. And I'm not talking about in terms of what is it worth, billions, trillions, whatever mm-hmm. the amount is. There are so many different property types. There's so many different areas within real estate. If you want to be on the acquisition side, you want to be an asset manager, maybe you want to be a property manager. There's the broker side of the business, being a tenant representative, maybe a landlord representative. Maybe you want to deal with sales. There are so many different, maybe you want to go into real estate valuation. That's my area of expertise. So there's so many areas within real estate for one to go into. And it's really wonderful to see all the students, by the way, both at University of Miami and Montclair State University. They are really excited, they're energetic, and they're just, they are very optimistic, and I'm very optimistic for them.
That's great. Thank you very much, Mark. It was really nice talking to you.
Oh, Laura, thank you so much for the opportunity, and maybe we will do it the 4 or 5 years.
Yes, we'll do it. We'll listen and we'll look at this recording and see what came true and what didn't.
Great. Thank you so much, Laura.
Thank
Have
you very
a
much,
wonderful
Mark.
day.
Thank you, everyone, for listening and watching. And don't forget to follow CPE's podcasts on Apple Podcasts and Spotify.